One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. But they're both assholes.
One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. And they're both assholes.
Asher Brothers Podcast coming every week. Sit down, kick back, and take a little peek into their lives. Their lives, their shitty little lives. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, that was supposed to get you hyped. Kirk and Kyle Asher sitting around gabbing, talking about nothing and what's going on in their lives. Their lives, their shitty little lives. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, that was supposed to get you hyped.
One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. But they're both assholes.
One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. One's a baller, one's a scholar. It's the Asher Brothers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Asher Brothers Podcast. It is not a new episode of that show at all. It is an unedited or nearly unedited episode of NYPD Blue Balls that I felt necessary to put out, mostly because we don't have a new episode of NYPD Blue Balls to put out, but also there is a little bit of, there's a little nugget of gold here in the unedited or nearly unedited recording of Season 4, Episode 20, E-Mission Impossible. Because when we were recording that episode, we also had recorded Season 4, Episode 19, Bad Rap, before it. And when we were getting ready to be done, the entire episode disappeared. I have no idea what happened to the recording. And so we kind of went into frenzy mode figuring out how we were going to put out an episode for Season 4, Episode 19. But while we were recording Season 4, Episode 20, Kyle, of course, took moments to make jokes about our recording and if it was actually happening. So I figured at a time in which we don't have a new episode to give you of NYPD Blue Balls, you can listen to the full, almost full, version of Season 4, Episode 20, E-Mission Impossible. Thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you still do, I'm sorry for the wait. It's difficult. We're traveling and, we both live in different states with different time zones. So I'm getting it out as soon as I can. Thank you. Here's the show. Season 4, Episode 20, E-Mission Impossible.
Kirk, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You're sure we're recording, right?
I don't know how happy I am.
You can start.
I don't know how.
Just want to make sure we record this one this time.
I just want to tell you, I'm so happy that we have such world-class comedy coming out of the co-host.
I can hear it in your voice that you're very, very frustrated by this, and it's making, I'm not mad at all that you lost it. I know you are, because, we put time into it. It sucks. I'm not that mad about it. Shit happens. Like you said, we are on Season 4, Episode 20, and it's your first time that's ever happened, you do recording it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, the bare minimum, so it doesn't really bother me that you lost it, but hearing the frustration in your voice is what's making me laugh so hard. So I apologize for that.
Speaking for the death of our souls, Mission Impossible opens up with two men and one woman dead at an Ecuadorian dance club.
It was weird. I didn't see Tom Cruise in this Mission Impossible. It was weird.
Well, Kyle, see, it's a pun on Mission Impossible.
Oh,
Tom Cruise.
Very funny guys.
Yeah, Tom Cruise isn't actually in it. I heard his secret boyfriend is, though.
His secret boyfriend, Jimmy Smith?
that would actually be endearing of Jimmy Smith. I wouldn't fault Jimmy Smith for that. I would fault Tom Cruise, because he's a weirdo.
But then wouldn't that make Jimmy Smith a weirdo?
No, because Jimmy Smith isn't a Scientologist.
Well, he would have to be if he was dating Tom Cruise.
Well, Scientologists aren't gay.
Not yet.
Give him some time.
L. Ron Hubbard will write somebody, will somehow contact someone in some time and let them, and tell them to write a new, Dianetics that says, being gay is okay.
Being gay is all right by us.
It's all right by me.
Well,
anyway, so, all right, Mission Impossible.
They go to this.
Hey, Kirk, real quick.
Yeah.
It's recording, right?
Yeah, it's recording.
I just want to make sure this time that, you know, we record it.
Yeah, we're recording, so.
Okay.
If I can continue.
Good to know. I'm glad we're recording this time.
Well, I don't want to waste any more of your precious time, Kyle. So, if you let me finish with the beginning of the episode, we can get you on your way. We can get you on your way to your important business that I know you need to conduct.
Kirk, this is an important episode that we're not discussing. It's episode 420.
It is episode 420.
Smoke 'em if you got 'em, gentlemen.
Vince runs down what happened at the shooting, because he was the first on the scene. It was a night watch murder, but Sipowitz and Simone are coming in for it. It was supposed to be
a lot of Vince Catelli FaceTime here.
A lot of Vince Catelli. Of course, Vince is played by Carmine Cardini from The Godfather.
Not anymore.
1 and 2. And The Money Pit. He has recently died, if you were not aware. He lets him know that it was a botched robbery and they started throwing shots. There's only 3 people in the entire establishment that speak English. It's the owner, his wife, and one of the waiters.
One of the waiters.
They go to them to figure out what's going on. They say it was 2 white guys who were not very well taken care of. And they came in to rob, and then one of them started shooting. Just the brown-haired one, the blonde-haired guy, did not shoot anybody. And they zero in on Hector the waiter, because he seems a bit skittish. And he says, no, I never saw these guys before, I don't know anything, do you guys want some coffee so we could get out of there? Sipowitz says, we'll get all these people down to the house so Martinez can talk to them. And Vince comes by, and Simone asks, how are you feeling? And he said, I have cardiac issues, I have urinary issues, and that's basically it. So Sipowitz says now he's at the phase where... I fucked up that somehow. He's at the phase where he's asked how he feels.
Did your brain reset or something?
I think I fucked up the quote. He said he's now at the phase where he's asked how he feels and he'll tell you. And I felt that was kind of dumb because of course he's going to tell you if you ask how he feels. Like, that's kind of how it works.
That is a dumb statement, but I was actually going to make a comment that it seems like lately anytime like they talk to Vince, he's always bitching about his health.
Yeah. And
he's always complaining about something.
He's always being the bearer of bad news about himself.
It's a Debbie Downer.
Then the opening of the show starts. This is, of course, NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of NYPD Blue. And here's the theme song to NYPD Blue. Assuming I'm recording...
When you fuck up in bunches, so...
Anyway, when they get the party members down to the house, Martinez is talking to one of them, and the guy's explaining in Spanish what's going on, and there's a comedic moment because each time Martinez is saying, nope, he didn't see anything, and Sipowitz is like, that wasn't no, he said a whole bunch there.
Oh my god, yeah.
It's also kind of annoying because he's dealt with people speaking English who said a whole bunch of shit, but it accounts, like, it all comes out to no.
It basically equals no, yeah, it basically equals I didn't see anything.
But he can't imagine someone speaking Spanish can't, like, explain things like that, I guess.
Yeah, like, he can't, yeah. Well, because as a detective, he needs every little bit of information. Like, so, granted, he may be saying no, but, like, how is he saying it? What words is he choosing to use? What explanations or, like, what specific moments or things is he choosing to use to describe it? That helps with the investigation. So I get why he's frustrated by it, but, like, it comes off, like, kind of funny.
Yeah, especially because at one point, because Martinez just goes, he said no, and he's like, No. He didn't say no. I know what's no in Spanish. It's no. Like, that part was pretty funny. And then when he says he didn't see anything the second time, Sibwich just slams his paper down. And I also love...
That's Martinez's fault, then. Like, Martinez is a detective. He should know, like, that you need more information than that.
But I think also...
I don't know.
I think also Martinez is, like, filtering it through his own detectiveness. So he's like, okay, I just listened to every word this dude said. He's not saying anything important. So we don't need to talk to him anymore.
Fair enough. I didn't think of it like that. So, I also didn't think of it like that either.
Because then when Sipwitz goes back at him and he goes like, yeah, he told me exactly what happened and I'm just not telling you. Like, like it was kind of him going like, I know when it's important information and when it isn't. If you just like fucking let it go. Eventually,
that's a good point. I didn't think of it like that either. I didn't think of that.
Eventually the waiter does come back on his own and they tell him they were gonna go get him if he didn't. And he is very vague about what's going on. He said, I may have told somebody something and I didn't intend for what happened to happen, but I didn't know that these somebodies would do something. And then he explains that he's being vague because he thinks they're going to put him in the middle of this. And Sipowicz says, we'll catch these assholes and they will put you in the middle of this because that's what assholes do. And he says, but you coming in here and showing us that you want to help, that shows that you're trying to be a good guy, so we're going to consider that. So the waiter gives him Jimmy and Frankie, but doesn't know their last names, and says that they hang out at the Rutherford, which is a shitty hotel.
Uh-huh.
Sipowicz and Simone go to this hotel, and as they walk in, Sipowicz says, this is the kind of place I always figured they'd find me dead in. Because if season one fans remember, he was going into these places with, was it Dolores? Lois. He was banging hookers in places like this, and he almost died in one. If you remember, I believe the pilot
episode. Yeah, that's where he was shot by the mobster guy.
So it was a pretty cool line. He notices that Simone is checking his watch, which we'll get into that later.
Will we, Greg?
We will. We're getting a little tease. There's a Jamaican man at the front desk, and his name is Hilton. And he says, "Go ahead, make
it." And you know what, Kirk? He's Jamaican me crazy.
Oh! Riots! Riotous over here, fucking nailing it.
He is Jamaican me crazy.
He's pretty funny because he's like, "Make your Hilton jokes." He lets them know that the guys already left and left their room in like shambles. And says all their shit's in the dumpster. And when Sipowicz says, oh, looks like we gotta go dumpster diving, Simone says, well, I can't do that because I gotta go to this meeting.
Oh, and that pisses off Sipowicz.
Sipowicz says, good thing they didn't take the trash out. We'd have lost the opportunity to crawl around a dumpster, sifting every type of filth up to botulism. And Sipowicz and Simone kind of go back and forth, because Sipowicz is like, oh yeah, well now you don't gotta be here, so I gotta be the one that goes through the dumpster. And he said, I thought we talked about this before, we knew we had to jump in a dumpster. He's like, oh, is that a guilty conscience? And he's like, well, I know you're not gonna let me keep that weight on my shoulders. He's like, oh, don't bet on it, and just leaves. Kind of a fun little jibs and jabs from partners.
Yeah, it's like when your mom and dad fight.
Sipowicz comes back from dumpster diving and finds the IDs and the personal effects of the people that were robbed, as well as receipts from a florist, because these two dudes robbed a bunch of people and then sent flowers to their moms like idiots.
Yeah. At least they're thoughtful boys.
They're thoughtful morons.
Yeah.
Martinez comes by to let him know that all of the people who witnessed the shot said it was the brown-haired guy shooting. And while he does that, he says, it might be a good idea that you wash up before that mom gets here. because they're bringing in the mom who got the flowers. And Sipowicz says, "You figure you'd smell like petunias, Martinez, rolling around in a dumpster?" When the mom comes in,
Sipowicz got jokes.
He does got jokes. This is a good episode for Sipowicz jokes, and especially non-aggressive ones like the last episode. You know, the one that I fucked up the recording. Ha!
Oh, well, we wouldn't know because we don't have a recording of it. Oh. We don't even know if it was. We don't, like, you could be lying. We could be lying to them as, like, a joke. Like, ha, we fucked that recording up.
There's no proof.
We didn't record it.
There's no proof.
Just skipping 419 because we really wanted to get to 420.
Anyways, when the mom comes in, Sipowicz goes hard on her super fast, like super aggressive with her.
Yeah, he's a little overly aggressive with certain people.
Cause she's like, "What's going on?" And he's like, "So are you gonna cooperate and let us know where your son is?" And she's like, "Well, what did he do? He
you know what's going on, bitch. What's you know what's going on? Don't fuck with us."
And it's also
like,
funny.
If you put him on HBO, that's what he would do.
And it's also funny because Simone comes in and sits down and has no idea why he's talking to this woman. Because Simone wasn't there for the flowers stuff. So he's just watching him, like, get aggressive with this woman. And he's like, look.
Tearing old lady apart, yeah.
And he's like, look, cooperation is necessary and we want the right kind of cooperation. And
it sounded like... Why did you sound like Obama right there?
What? I'm working on my Obama impression.
I don't know. It's a little like cooperation. Yeah, we need some cooperation.
I want to sound like Joe Biden's best friend.
Oh Jesus! Oh, poor Joe. poor Joe.
Fucking A. Mr. Biden, how do you feel you deal with race relations? Look. I was the vice president of the first black president. Obviously, I have a black card now.
So I'm going to play it all the time.
Oh, man. So, they're going hard on this woman. We start talking about some random porno. Sipowicz is going aggressive with this mother because... he just wants to figure out where this kid is. And she doesn't know because he doesn't have a permanent address. And eventually she gives up that he has a girlfriend named Terry who drinks. And then I realized it's Jimmy, Frankie, and Terry. So it's only people with names that end in Y. And Mary, the mother, says, "I have her phone number, here it is." And they get it from her to go pick up Jimmy. Her last line of dialogue is, "I knew something was wrong when I got the flowers. He's never sent me flowers a day in his life." Which was kind of funny, because then she's probably going to find out her son was involved in murders.
Murders. Straight murders.
Straight murders. When Simone and Sipowicz pick up Jimmy, he's walking through the house, and... I just want to highlight, this guy's name is Shannon Rowe.
Mm-hmm.
He was on, he was in Biodome, and he was in Boogie Nights. And he's been in a couple movies playing, essentially surfer dudes. But I thought he did a great job, because the joke is that he's basically an idiot. And he walks through the house and he says, "You sure you got the wrong Jimmy Moser?" And Sipowicz says, "I'm not going to tell you, the computer is never wrong." And then they walk into a room where another guy is, and he's in the pokey room in the cage. And he says, "That guy committed a crime in there, huh?" And Simone goes, "Yeah, we get those occasionally." And then Sipowicz says, "Come on, we'll talk about your possible mistaken identity in there." He immediately says, "I was with Terry last night," when they try to get him to confess he was there. Then he said, so we're going to, she's going to, they say she's going to hold up to that when we tell her she might be involved in a capital crime. And he's like, oh, I was with another woman. It was a one night stand. We didn't get to names. So when they bring up the evidence, he says, I am innocent of any shooting that was done in there. It was all Frankie, because he was doing blow, and he was freaking out because the foreign people couldn't understand what we were saying, and it's really hard to rob that many people. Real first world problems.
That's pretty funny.
Do you know how hard it is to rob that many people? And they were foreign, they didn't even understand what we were saying. And then he's like, look, I don't know where Frankie is. He called me from a bar, and I didn't want to talk to him because my girlfriend was there. And he's like, is he going to call back? And he's like, I don't know. And he's like, do you know where he is? He's like, he didn't say. And he's like, well, how are you going to contact him? He's like, well, I was going to call him. He's like, you have the phone number?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. So
it's
then
like the slow play. It's pretty funny.
So he hands him the phone number, and Sipowicz smacks him on the back of the head and says, try providing the information we're seeking as quick as possible, Jimmy, because you got a very irritable personality.
Jesus.
And then he says, I do got something. He has my gun. He threw away his and he took mine. And Simone was like, see, that's good information. And then he stands up to put on his coat and says, let's go hunt this Frankie guy. And Jimmy goes, okay, good luck. And just the look that Simone gives him is so funny. It's such a good scene because it's so much comedy and so much fun. The next Simone Sipowicz situation, they go and sting Frankie at the bar by having Jill call up the bar asking for him and pretending to be a woman. And that's Jill Kirkendall. You may have forgotten because she hasn't been in the two episodes so far. And she just shows up in the middle of this one.
They do that every now and then, though.
And when they pick him up from the bar, they find the gun and they drag his ass out of there. When they bring him in for interrogation, Frankie is played by... Did I fuck up his name? Curry Graham? I gotta double check.
Yeah, Curry Graham. Curry Graham's fine.
Well, I want to make sure his name is right. We are journalists.
Yeah, Curry Graham. I'm looking at the IMDb page.
Okay, well...
C-U-R-R-I-E Graham.
And Curry Graham is a famous face because he is an important episode in the later episodes of NYPD Blue itself. He comes back as a pretty big character, and it's weird that they chose a guy for that character that was a random bad guy in an earlier episode.
They did that all the time, though.
But I think it's a little different just because of how high profile he becomes in the later seasons, where it's, like, so obvious. And he has a very, very distinguished face, where it's like, oh, it's that guy. But
okay. Okay, I guess.
I'm also surprised they hired him because during that interrogation, he didn't really act his balls off. Like, it wasn't that great of a scene.
Well, I mean, I'm not spoiling much, but he doesn't come back till much later, so maybe he like had to work on it for a little bit or something. I don't know. I don't know, dude.
He basically goes for it after he's been told that Jimmy's already rolled on him. And they have enough evidence to prove he was there, so they're gonna nail him to the wall.
Like Jesus.
Yes, very much like Jesus. So we have a couple different stories here, and I don't know which one to do first. We got Russell, who's with Medavoy. We have Medavoy's own story. And then we got the Joey Salvo stuff.
Well, I mean, as long as you're recording, I don't care which one we start with.
Okay. All right. Now...
If you can promise me that, then I don't care.
I'm telling you right now, I'm nervous that it's going to happen again. And if it happens again,
I'm hanging up.
I'm going to be furious at you, mostly because that means there's nothing I could have done to fix it. It's just happening to the computer.
Okay, then we just kind of laugh it off and we go from there. I don't know.
Well, the Joey Salvo stuff's pretty quick, and I think it's just setting up for the future.
Okay. Hit it with the Joey Sal.
In the middle of the investigation with Simone and Sipowicz, Simone mentions to Fancy that he has a note in his mailbox from Joey Salvo for a meetup. And what's really awkward is Fancy comes up to him and he's like, I got this from Joey Salvo. And then Fancy kind of makes a move like, let's go somewhere private, and only steps backwards like a foot.
Yeah.
It was like, let's get more privacy. One step back. Okay, what's the deal? It was almost...
Oh, well, you didn't see. They have the technology that Wonder Woman has with her invisible plane. They just have, like, an invisible shield area that they're able to walk in.
Invisible shield area in the NYPD.
Yeah,
Fancy says the Chief of D's wants him to cooperate, and he says, okay, I'll cooperate. He goes to meet Joey Salvo on the street, and Joey Salvo wants to... Where are you, Joey Salvo? Because I do want to mention the actor, if I have the time.
Oh, well, I think we have the time.
Fuck, what the hell? I've been working on a new way to organize the things, and it's working out fairly well, except right now. When he meets Salvo, Joey Salvo is played by Peter Onatari. Wow, fuck my penmanship.
Yeah, 100%. Peter, right in the ass.
Peter O, as I call him, is a slightly famous face. He was in Goodfellas, but he was also in Rocket Man, not the Elton John Rocket
Peter
Man.
Peter
Onorati. Not the Rocket Man about Elton John, the Rocket Man about the guy going to Mars. And, Salvo...
What guy... No, there's no Rocket Man about a guy going to Mars?
There is a Rocket Man about a guy going to Mars. It was made by Disney. It stars Harlan Williams.
Oh, and that one. I was thinking of the Rocketeer.
And a monkey. And they go to Mars.
And a monkey...
Salvo wants him to run a plate for him for a bottle of single malt scotch.
A skate plate.
And he agrees to and takes the scotch. Later in the episode, when he's done with his investigation, he runs the plate himself. And it comes up with no hit and no registration. So when he goes to Joey, he mentions that. He says, I think you gave me the wrong license plate. There's no hit. And Joey says, I think you know that means it could be part of...
Forget about it.
I think you know that means it could be part of an investigation. So it's...
Playing coy there.
And I think possibly... Possibly Simone knew that, and he was hoping that Joey didn't know that, so that he would just go, "Oh, it didn't hit. No big deal. Maybe it's something else." But in fact, Joey is smart enough to know that's probably in an investigation, which means it could be a FBI car that's tailing him.
It could be.
And that's all that happens with them, I think, setting up the fact that we're going to have more Joey Salvo interactions in the future.
Yeah.
When it comes to Greg...
The Joey Salvo story is a very long play.
And it's only in, like, little parts in each episode.
Yeah. Like, they take a while to set that up.
I'll leave Medavoy for last, because that's what the... episode's about, or the title is about. a woman comes in looking for a detective, and Russell gets her. Her name is Carla O'Dell. And when they go in the coffee room, the woman has clearly been assaulted because she has a fresh, bloody lip. And she lets Russell know that her husband, Zeke, had been hitting her. But her daughter, Rosie, had confided in her that Zeke was molesting her. When Russell was like, okay, well, I have to talk to her and I have to talk to Zeke, she says, Rosie's at her mother's sick ever since she told me, and Zeke is at OTB or the bar. Now, do you know what OTB is?
OTB.
Because I had to go look it up.
Isn't that something where, like, veterans go to? Or, like, isn't that something where veterans go to? Or something where, like, you, No, yeah, the only thing I can think of is, like, something that, like, involves veterans.
As it turns out, it stands for off-track betting. So that means he was going to bet on horses. Because I was like, because when she said it at first, I was like, oh, that's probably his job.
Yeah.
But then when I saw it the second time, I was like, I better look this up, because it's probably something else, and it's for, and it's betting, and so he's going to bet and then drink.
Oh, yeah, I had no idea.
I would say the actress did a pretty sweet job acting, and especially the line, I put her in the way of this.
Uh-huh.
Trying to, like, take responsibility for what happened, even though she couldn't have known. When she runs down what's happening to Fancy, he says, well, make sure you substantiate the rape, but go ahead on the assault charges. He says, take Greg, because he doesn't speak Spanish. So, Russell comes up to Greg and asks for help, and he starts complaining that someone's stealing his quarters. And at this point, Greg has a specimen jar in his coat pocket, which, I guess I will continue using the Greg stories. At the beginning of the episode, he rolls up to Paige Turco from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 2, Secret of the Ooze, and 3, Turtles in Time. He rolls up to get his specimen jar for jerking him, so that she can make a baby, and she handed him a specimen jar and just a bag of porn. Just, I don't know why she gave him so much porn.
It's a little weird.
And then she said, you just need an hour and a half between him jerking off in the cup and getting it into her vagina, I guess. So, he's on a beeper, and he's on, a moment's notice to get cracking. And he leaves, and when Russell starts talking to him, he's feeling the specimen jar in his chest, and she goes, hey, what's going on? What's in your coat pocket? And he covers by saying it's a specimen jar to test him for infectious diseases, which is not a good cover, bro. That's weirder than what's actually going on.
No, it's not, because he's a hypochondriac, so it kind of fits to his character, and people won't question it as much.
Because the second anyone says, oh, I'm going to be tested for infectious diseases, I want to be like, I want to know what you're talking about. Like, what do you think's happening that you need a specimen jar, and you need it at any point? And also, is it already filled with something? Like, I just have a ton more questions after someone says that. Russell and Medavoy go to talk to Rosie at her grandmother's house, and it's a pretty dark scene where they're trying to figure out what happened, and she eventually says that Zeke raped her. Awkwardly, Greg affirms that clearly she's not lying, which is kind of a weird thing that he has to come over and say it.
Yeah.
And then they hear screaming in the bathroom, and there's blood all over the bathroom, and she's laying in the middle of the bathroom, and it appears she had an issue that is a miscarriage.
Yeah.
It's also, I think it's kind of interesting to point out that Greg was like, everybody's like on the floor trying to help her, and Russell's like, call an ambulance, Greg, and she's like, and he's like, oh my god, did she have a miscarriage? Was she pregnant? And she's like, and Russell was like, Greg, call an ambulance.
Call an ambulance, damn it.
Stop standing there and do something simple, please. They go and get Zeke, and he's pissed off because they lied about the reason they're bringing him in. And he thinks it's only for assault. I also really like this guy. His name's Ron Canada. He was in Wedding Crashers and National Treasure, and he's been in a little bit of things here and there in small parts, but I really liked him because he's very, very sinister and weird, but doesn't seem very intelligent. Like, most of the time we're dealing, like, when it's a really good character, like, and they're sinister, it's also like they're smart, and what they're saying is really creepy, like the Webster Killer. Or the guy that was killing people through windows. I can't remember his name. But this guy was pissed because they got him on the assault. And he said, oh, I did it because, you know, she doesn't want to have kids and I want her to have kids. So I may have acted inappropriately. So then Russell sniffs it out and says, is that why you raped Rosie so you could have a child? Is that why she's pregnant? And he goes, oh, she's pregnant? And he's like, is that why...
He gets excited. It's weird.
And he also says, like, is that why she's in the hospital? And she's like, no, she's in the hospital for an appendicitis, but that doesn't change the fact that you raped him. You raped her. And he's like, look, it wouldn't be that big a deal, because she's not my actual daughter. So she could still have that baby.
Yeah, that's weird.
One thing that does happen, that's during the interrogation, when they bring him in and set him in the room, Russell goes over with Fancy what's going on and saying, like, oh, she miscarried, and he doesn't know that we're bringing him in for the rape, just the assault. But she's saying that to him while he's still going through the door. So in theory, he heard all that. So it was, that was kind of a gaffe, but not super important. After he says that, we can still keep the baby because she's not actually my daughter. Greg freaks out and calls him a sick son of a bitch. Like, that matters. She's 12 years old, and Russell drags him outside and fucking corrects his shit in the middle of the hallway. And when she does that, Greg folds super fast and realizes, like...
Yeah, he knows he's wrong.
Yeah, he figures out, he's like, oh yeah, I'm not helping. So, what they do then, because Russell realizes he wants to be a father so bad they can trick him to explain what's going on. And they trick him by saying that she actually gave birth and the baby's premature but is alive. It's also awkward that they tell him it's a boy and he makes sure twice.
Yeah.
And then I think the most creepy thing he says is family has always been the most important thing. And he agrees...
That's not that creepy.
It is when you realize he raped a 12-year-old to have a kid. And technically, the person he molested is his stepdaughter, which is still his family in some respects. It's a very... That's why I said his character is so sinister, because it's like, okay, you're a dumbass that doesn't understand how fucking wrong you are. But the way he was like, look, man, family's the most important thing to me, and I just want to be a father. And he gets all, like, weird and gushy when he realizes it's a kid. His kid is born, and it's a boy. And after he writes... After he starts writing about what happened, Greg actually meets up with Martinez in the locker room and says, like, "I don't know, James, someone's stealing my quarters and I'm worried about jerking off."
Yeah, that was a funny situation.
And Martinez is like, "What are you worried about, man?" He's like, "You're obviously not shooting blanks. You have two kids." And he says,
"He's doing fine."
And then he said, "Well, no, it's about performance. Like, I should have done a trial run, but now I'm afraid to, because then she's going to call, like, right after that." And
so funny.
And he's like,
"I'm not checking off."
And then, what's his name? Martinez is like, "It's just like riding a bike." And he's like, "Oh, okay."
That fucking played out,
cliche. Saying.
Yeah, cliche.
They go back into the room and Zeke says he wrote it like an apology, so hopefully his wife and stepdaughter sees it. And then he kind of pulls back and says, "I'm not going to sign this until I see my daughter and Rosie are safe."
Yeah, he gets really weird about it.
And they trick him again by pretending that there's photos of the baby and Rosie. And then he's like, "Don't worry, I'll sign it. And then right after he signs it, they're like, "Yeah, she miscarried. You're going to prison. Fuck you. Enjoy prison, dick." Like, it was such a snap. Like, the second he signed it, it was like, "Yeah, enjoy, because you're fucking going to prison, you asshole."
But isn't all that misleading, you know?
I think this is one of those moments when NYPD Blue does not give a shit because the dude's a child molester.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
There's always these moments where they're like, "Are we going too far? Should we really put our hands on this guy? Should we really do things to this guy?" But when it's a really severe crime, they're like, "Oh, we don't give a shit."
Yeah.
Like, we don't give two shits. Greg, later in the episode says he's going to stake out his locker to see who's stealing the quarters.
Yeah.
And he still has to be on call to jerk off, so he's gonna stay there, I guess. Because jerking off in your own home would be too easy.
Unless she lives nearby, because he has to, like, get it to her and shit, you know?
And there's a, it's a pretty comical scene, but it's just dealing with an annoying character, where Medavoy is sitting in the shitter, and the woman comes in to clean their bathroom/locker room. And then the beeper goes off. And he runs out of the bathroom scaring the woman. And he calls Abby. And when he calls Abby, he doesn't just go, "Hey, it's time. Okay," and hang up the phone. He's like, "Okay, I got my magazines. I got my specimen jar. I'm going to go in. I'm going to jerk off into the specimen jar." Like, we get it. Like, you don't need to tell them what you're going to do. You don't need to be weird about it. You could just... they called you to let you know to go do it. So then...
Yeah, we don't need a play-by-play.
We don't need a play-by-play, John Madden. So he goes back into the room, and the woman's cleaning. He's like, "I'm going to need you to leave." And she goes, "Okay, I'll come back." He's like, "No, for the rest of the night. I need this." And as he's saying it, he's taking off his belt, which is like, couldn't you fucking wait till she was out of the room?
And why do you need the whole night?
Like, it sounds like now this woman is going to go tell her friends, "Yeah, so I dealt with one cop who made me leave one night. Apparently he was just going to jerk off all over that room and didn't want anybody to clean it."
Yeah, in front of me. Like, it was not even a problem.
It was... He then sits down on a public toilet and pulls out some porn. I don't know how that's easier to jerk off than just standing in the shower or a different situation.
Kirk, this dude is at his job.
Yeah, he's at his job jerking off. Then Vince comes in, Vince Gattelli. And he comes in and locks the doors, something simple, or something Medavoy probably should have done himself.
Yeah.
And he goes into Medavoy's locker to steal some quarters. And Medavoy scares the shit out of him. and they start arguing with each other. Vince blames the heart thing, says he doesn't know if he's going to have enough money to survive, that he keeps stealing shit. And he's going to make good.
Because that makes it okay.
Well, yeah, once you get heart problems, you're allowed to steal shit. It's just a rule.
Yeah, it's totally fine. Like, duh.
So he... So him and Medavoy are going back and forth, and what I like to call an annoying off, where they're just being annoying to each other, where it's like, oh, my heart, and he's like, yeah, well, that's a good enough reason to steal my quarters, and it's like, they're fucking quarters, and they're going back and forth, and then eventually Medavoy just goes, I need you to leave and think about what you did, which is like...
It's very much like an old white man argument.
And when he does, he's like, okay, gonna go jerk off now. And the end of the episode is... It's a very interesting series of events. He rolls up to the gynecologist, and he sees Kathy, Abby's girlfriend, who I don't think is completely sold on Greg. And he hands... he goes to hand her his semen, and he says verbatim, I think there's a good amount of semen in there.
Yeah, he just gotta let her know. Like, you gotta make sure. just give her that heads up, you know?
Hey, whole lot of semen in here.
Hey, a whole lot of semen. I think we're gonna get her good.
And then, another thing that's awkward, he's like, you're gonna have to ask the doctor for comparison. No, she doesn't. We don't need to know if it's actually a lot of semen. It's not important. And then they awkwardly, like, Abby gives him a hug and, like, is like, thank you. And then he's like, oh, I thought of a pun on the way over. A mission accomplished. And it was like, okay, guy, obviously it's awkward. Just let it be. And then Abby, who's played by Paige Turco, April O'Neil, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Secret of the Ooze, and Turtles in Time. She kisses him on the cheek and says, I pray our baby is as sweet as you and gentle and good. And then she says, I'm honored you'll be his father. Mm-hmm. So she already knows the gender of the baby, apparently? She's going to decide that it's a boy?
Well, I don't know. That's just kind of a gaffe, I feel like.
And then...
That's someone not paying attention.
And neither of them. Medavoy says, thank you, Abby, Kathy, and then starts to walk away and says, the baton is passed and the episode's over. At that last scene, I kind of thought to myself, did these two lesbians just search out the most unappealing person for sperm? So that they have a kid who's not very attractive and unappealing, so they grow up with more of a personality?
No, they explain that why they pick Greg, kind of. They talk about, like, how nice he is, and, like, how, like, cool of a guy he is, and all this shit. Like, I think there's some qualities to Greg that they want in their child, whatever it is. But, like, I don't think they fully understand, like, how big of a, like, dork he is. But...
Because the entire time I was watching it, I felt like, okay, they're just trying to get the biggest Gus, the biggest nerd, so that...
No, because if you were two lesbian women in the late 90s, early 2000s, and you wanted to have a kid, you wouldn't want your kid to be a pussy, because he's going to have to deal with a bunch of bullying and shit from people who are going to make fun of him for having two lesbian moms. So, you wouldn't want your kid to be a Gus, you are a nerd. You'd want him to be strong-willed and be able to take it. Which, I think Medavoy is able to take it in some sense, but...
Then
he's kind of a bitch sometimes.
Then it should have been, in the last episode, it should have been Abby going, we're going to ask you if you can get your friend Simone to give us some sperm. I think that's it for the episode. Oh, there is one thing. that might be a tasteless joke, so it's a good time to it's a good time to put it in here. During the transition, the transition music and scenes of NYPD Blue, where like they cut in with a song and there's a bunch of fast clips of the city, there was a pretty intense glamour shot of the Twin Towers, and you know what?
Yeah.
Never forget, and guys.
And it was recently
September 11th.
It was recently someone's Annie.
Oh wow. I don't know if you watch it, but you know Last Week Tonight?
I know what?
You know Last Week Tonight, the John Oliver show?
Yeah.
They did one of those, and now this, and it was people reminding what September 11th is all about, and it was people on Fox News, because I guess this one person who hosts a show, her birthday is September 11th, so...
Oh, wow.
So, like, on Fox News, they're like, and of course, today, you gotta get out there, you gotta thank a first responder, you gotta thank a fireman, you gotta thank a police officer, you gotta thank those that help us, and of course, happy birthday to my friend. And it's like just a montage of people doing that, where they're like, yeah, what a horrible day where so many lives lost, but we got a cake! Like, it was so funny, because they just put one after another of all these times where her birthday is September 11th.
That's awkward.
Oh, man. September 11th, never forget. That, never forget on September 11th. Anything else you'd like to say about this episode?
No. I think that's it. I think I'm good.
Just want to reiterate, I think Ron Canada did a fucking awesome job as Zeke. He's a really interesting, crazy character. And it looks like Medavoy's gonna have himself a lovely child that he never sees.
Yeah, but like you said earlier, he doesn't see his kids now, so different.
He's just got kids in different counties, dog. He's just laying that seed. Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and where you find a podcast. On Twitter, at AsherBrosPod. On Instagram, AsherBrothersPodcasts. We mostly just mention when new episodes are out, but sometimes we will chat about the show on those formats. Thank you for listening, and have a good one. Alright, so now we have to do this very carefully and see what happens.